the city by the Golden Gate. This is KSSR DB San Francisco, Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. It's time for Yesteryear, a look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thank you, Dave, and again, welcome to Yesteryear, the best of the golden age of radio. On today's program, we'll enjoy Inner Sanctum Mysteries and musical score. But first, just in time for baseball season, it's the Bud Abbott and Lou Costello program with their famous Who's on First routine. Bud Abbott and Lou Costello skyrocketed to fame after their first performance of Who's on First before a national radio audience in March of 1938 on the Kate Smith Hour. The boys continued as guest stars on the Kate Smith Hour for 99 weeks until the summer of 1940 when they began their own program, which aired on NBC. The Abbott and Costello program continued on NBC through June of 1947, moving then to ABC, which continued until June of 1949. On today's program, it's the famous Who's on First routine. The New York Yankees ask Lou to substitute for the ailing Joe DiMaggio, so Bud explains the finer points of baseball to his confused partner in their classic Who's on First routine. From April of 1947, it's the Abbott and Costello Show with Who's on First on this edition of Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marr, Jameis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do.
That's right, folks. C for comedy, A for Abbott, M for Maxwell, E for Ennis, L for Lou Costello.
Hey, Costello, Costello, come here. Costello, will you come over here, please? Will you listen to me? What are you writing on that pad?
Hey, Abbott.
What are you writing on that pad?
I'm just making out a list of girls I'm going to kiss next week. Here's who I got picked out. Lizzie Schwartz, Maggie Mugglemeyer, Tessie Tinfoil, Lana Turner.
Now, wait a minute. Lana Turner wouldn't kiss you.
Oh, no?
Oh, no.
Then I'll scratch her off my list.
I love you. You dummy, always thinking of girls. Girls, girls, girls. Now, great men don't waste their time on girls. Where do you suppose Benjamin Franklin would have been if he'd have thought of girls all of the time?
In the front row at Earl Carroll's?
No. Costello, I've been telling you for the past 3 weeks. You've got to quit chasing girls and get yourself a job. Look at you. Look how sloppy you are. Look at your socks.
I can't help my socks, Abbott. It's those new Hickok plastic garters.
What's the matter with them?
Your socks stay up, but your legs fall down.
Yeah.
Luke Costello.
Here, boy.
Out of the way, fatso. I'm looking for Luke Costello.
Boy, he is Luke Costello.
The famous Luke Costello.
Certainly.
The one and only Luke Costello.
Yes.
That's me. Gee, I listen to you on the radio every Thursday night. You break me up when you say, how do you do?
Wait a minute! Wait a minute! That ain't me, that's the mad Russian.
You're saying?
I'm neat.
Who's going to take this telegram?
I'll take it.
It's collect, $14.
He'll take it. Oh, give it to me. Here, boy. Hey, Costello, this telegram is from Joe DiMaggio. Listen to this. Dear Lou, as you know, I am recovering from a foot operation. I would appreciate you taking my place on the New York Yankees until I recover. Please report to the Yankee Stadium immediately. Signed, Joe DiMaggio.
Abbott.
Hey, that's wonderful.
The news. That's the news I've been waiting for. I'm going to be a big league ball player.
Yes.
DiMaggio probably heard about my playing with the Cucamonga Wildcats last year.
You a ball player? I don't believe it, Costello. You know nothing about ball.
Oh, no, I eat baseball. I live baseball. All night when I'm asleep, I dream about baseball.
Don't you ever dream about girls?
What, and miss my turn up at bat?
Oh! That's ridiculous. What's the matter with you?
Yes, and another thing, Abbott. What page are you on?
Never mind what page you're on.
Not only that, in Paterson, New Jersey, I worked out with a baseball team. I used to stay out till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Why did you stay out till 4 o'clock in the morning?
This was a girls' baseball team.
Costello, if you're going to play with the New York Yankees, you really have to know something about big league baseball, Lou.
I know all about baseball.
All right, suppose there's a left-handed pitcher pitching. What do you do?
I put in a right-handed batter.
Now, suppose there's a right-handed pitcher pitching.
I put in a left-handed batter.
But now I trick you. I take out the right-handed pitcher and put in a left-handed pitcher.
Then I double-cross you. I take out my left-handed batter and put in a right-handed batter.
Now, wait a minute. Where are you getting all those right-handed batters?
The same place where you're getting all those left-handed pitchers.
Oh.
Hello, Bud. Hello, Louis, honey.
It's Marilyn Maxwell.
Hello, Marilyn. I've got great news. I'm going to play ball with the New York Yankees. I'm taking you along as a pitcher.
Oh, now, Costello, Marilyn Maxwell can't pitch.
Oh, no? You should see all the guys she struck out that were trying to get the first base.
No.
This kid has got some nice curves.
All right.
Oh, Louis, you're so sweet. But I do hope you be careful. You know, big league baseball is a very dangerous game.
Oh, what's dangerous about baseball, Marilyn?
Well, I read in the paper this morning that in the opening game in Boston, 5 players died on base.
Marilyn, you don't seem to know much about baseball. Let me show you how to play indoor baseball. First, I put my left arm around your waist. Then I snuggle my head on your shoulder like this. Then I press my cheek against your cheek.
Oh, wait a minute, Costello. That's not the way to play indoor baseball.
How do you like that? Every season, new rules.
Well, goodbye and good luck, Louis. I just know you'll become famous with those New York Yankees.
Marilyn's right, Costello. This is your chance to become famous. Now, you've got a good job as a baseball player, and you might find your proper niche in life.
Yes, I might. I mean, after all, if I find my... What will I find?
A niche. You'll find your niche.
Abbott, when I find an itch, I scratch it.
No. What in the world are you talking about?
An itch. I once had the 7-year itch.
What happened?
I scratched real fast and got rid of it in 3.5 years.
About that kind of an itch. I mean an itch in life. A niche in life is what everyone is looking for. Anyone who is successful has found a niche.
Well, if that's the case, I know an Airedale that is doing very well.
Listen to me, Costello. When I say an itch, I don't mean an itch like you have when you have an itch. I mean an itch like you have when you have a notch.
Oh, you don't mean an itch like an itch when you have an itch. You mean an itch like you have when you have a notch.
Now you've got it.
Now I've got it. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Costello, why do you mash everything up like that? You're the most mixed-up man I ever saw.
Well, maybe it's because I fell on my mother's mixmaster this morning. She had it set for mashed potatoes.
Oh.
I'm warm, mother.
I know that. Look, idiot. All I'm trying to tell you is that a niche is a notch. Catch?
Natch.
Natch. All right. Now you know that a niche is a notch. You know that both of them are the same.
Yes.
Now, I could have a notch and you could have a niche.
Yes. Niche to me and notch to you.
Yeah. I'm only trying to impress you the importance of being a big league ball player and having a good income. Did you ever draw a nice big fat salary?
No, I never drew a fat salary, but I once sketched a skinny tomato.
No. So when I say draw, I don't mean draw like you draw when you draw. All I mean draw like you draw when you draw a salary.
Abbott, let me smell your breath. Mm-hmm, just as I thought.
You've drawn one too many already.
Now, can you listen to me, please? When I say you draw a salary, I mean you draw money.
Now he's got me drawing money. Wait till the FBI finds out about this. I'll probably draw 20 years in a clink. And they don't feed you any celery in there, either.
Costello, when I say you draw money, I mean you draw like you draw money to spend it. Not like when you draw on an easel.
That's what I always say. With money, it's easel come, easel go. No.
Everybody draws money. I draw money. I've been drawing money for years. My brother draws money. He's been drawing money for years.
You draw and your brother draws?
Certainly.
Just as I thought. You and your brother are an old pair of drawers.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now back to Bud Abbott and Lou Costello. And while you light up a camel, here's Skinny Ennis with Linda.
When I go to sleep, I never count sheep. I count all the charms about Linda. But lately it seems, in all of my dreams, I walk with my arms about Linda. But what good does it do me? For Linda does know I exist. Can't help feeling gloomy. Think of all the loving I've missed. We pass on the street, my heart skips a beat. I say to myself, hello, Linda. If only she'd smile, I'd stop her a while. And then I would get to know Linda. But miracles still happen. And when my lucky star begins to shine, with one lucky break, I'll make Linda mine. On the street, my heart skips a beat. I say to myself, hello, Linda. If only she'd smile, I'd stop her a while, and then I would get to know Linda. But miracles still happen, and when my lucky star begins to shine, with one lucky break, I'll make Linda mine.
To be a big league ball player, you've got to get yourself in shape. Now, from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., you lift weights. From 9 to 10, deep knee bends. 10 to 11, skip rope. 11 to 12, run 5 miles.
12 to 1, I'll never make it.
I love it. You idiot, you'll never be a ball player. Staying up late and going to nightclubs, eating rich food, running around with beautiful girls. Do you know what can happen to you?
Yes, I can become manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Costello. I don't even know why DiMaggio picked you. You don't even know how to swing a bat.
I know all about swinging bats. When I was a kid, my father used to hit me with a baseball bat. My brother used to hit me with a baseball bat. My Uncle Artie Stebbins used to hit me with a baseball bat. And my mother used to hit me with a tennis racket.
With a tennis racket?
Yes, she didn't like baseball.
Hiya, fellas.
Well, it's Skinny Ennis.
Hey, Costello. I heard about you taking Joe DiMaggio's place for the New York Yankees.
That's right.
You know, I used to pitch for the Hollywood Stars. And boy, I'll never forget my last game. There were 5 men on base.
Wait. 5 men on base. Now, that's impossible.
Did you ever see the Hollywood Stars play?
Ennis, I've seen the Hollywood Stars, and I don't remember you.
Oh, I've changed a lot since then. I had the biggest buck teeth you ever saw. I was the only man on the team that could slide into second base and spike you from either end. Well, so long, Fatso.
So long, Skinny. So long. Hey, you know that Skinny would make an ugly skeleton?
All right. Costello, don't waste time with him. Now, you've got to get ready for the opening game.
Yes, I think we're going to play the Cleveland Indians.
Cleveland Indians, eh?
Uh-huh.
Feller pitching?
Certainly there's a feller pitching.
Who do you think they'd use a girl?
Oh, I know they don't use a girl. I said feller pitching.
What feller?
Feller with the Cleveland Indians.
Look, Abbott, there's 9 guys on a Cleveland team. Now, which feller are you talking about?
Feller that pitches. There is only one feller with Cleveland.
You mean 9 Yankees are going to play against one feller?
That's right.
You mean there's no fellers in the outfield?
No.
And there's no fellers in the infield?
No. Cleveland only has one feller.
Well, this feller must be pretty good if they don't, he don't need any other players but himself.
Look, all the players will be out there helping him.
You just said there was only one feller on the team.
That's right.
Then where did all them other fellers come from?
Oh, you idiot. When I say there's only one feller on the team, I mean there is only one feller that pitches.
Well, Abbott, when the manager of the team wants this pitcher, what does he call him?
Feller.
You mean he just hollers, hey, feller! And this guy knows that they mean him?
That's right. His name is Feller, Feller, Bob Feller. And when I say there is only one feller on the team that pitches, that's it. And the feller that pitches is Feller. There's only the other fellers on the team, but there's only one feller.
Boy, are you mixed up. Oh, you mean the feller that pitches is feller. And there's other fellers on the team, but they're not fellers?
Now you grasp it.
Yes, I grasp it, but it keeps slipping out of my hands.
Let's go into this sporting goods store and get your baseball equipment. I want you to look right for the opening game. Now, go ahead and ask that lady there where they keep the baseball uniforms.
Pardon me, miss.
Well, if it isn't Mr. Albert.
Hello.
And Mr. Costello.
Hello.
You fought, little Manu.
What are you doing in the sporting goods store, miss?
Oh, I just stopped in to get a gift for my nephew. I'm buying him a Boz ball.
Boz
ball?
Abbott, you know what a Boz ball is. That's what the pooter throws to the coocher. And the booter tries to boot a home run.
My nephew is just a lotto chope, but his ambition is to be a Brooklyn Dodger catcher.
Well, if he's only a little guy, why don't he join the Detroit Tigers and be a short stoop?
Going. As we say in Chinese, Gisha gooey hop suey on push back to you.
And a dish of gooey chop suey and a push to you, too.
Hey, look, Costello. Here comes the salesman now.
Oh, good morning, boys. As Johnny Weissmuller said to Buster Crab, what dive did you come out of?
Well, my friend and I are here to get some baseball equipment. I'd like to see a baseball uniform that would fit Costello.
So would I. Look, as Adam said to Eve, quit ribbing me. However, I'll do the best I can. We'll start with the spiked shoes. What size do you wear?
8.
Oh, let me see. I've only got 1 pair left, and they're size 5. Maybe you can squeeze into them, Costello. Go ahead and try.
Okay.
What do you know? Open-toed baseball shoes.
Now for the uniform. My, you're certainly a pudgy little rascal, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you overweight?
I'm about 120 pounds overweight, but I'm going back to my normal weight.
Yes, what's normal?
60 pounds overweight.
Costello, you should really go on a diet. Yeah, of course you know what a diet is, don't you?
Oh, sure. That's where you can eat all you want of everything you don't like.
Young man, if you really want to reduce, why don't you exercise with a couple of dumbbells?
Okay, I'm ready whenever you and Abbott are.
All right. Cut that out.
We've got to get your baseball equipment. Mister, do you have any bats?
Oh, certainly. Here's a fine bat. Autographed by Slaughter of the Cardinals. This bat was made for Slaughter.
Ain't you got one that was made for baseball?
When he says Slaughter, he means Slaughter the baseball player.
Slaughter the baseball player? With that bat, you could slaughter anybody.
No, no, Costello. I'm talking about Slaughter. Everybody knows Slaughter. He knows Slaughter.
Well, maybe he knows Slaughter, but I don't know him.
You idiot. Everybody knows Slaughter, the baseball player. Slaughter is the man's last name.
What's his first name?
He knows.
Now, there's a clever guy. He knows his first name.
Oh, look. Let's forget about the bat. Look, mister, do you have a baseball cap that will fit Costello's head?
What size pencil sharpener does he wear?
Yeah.
Oh, a baseball cap. Oh, yes, here's a dandy. This is the kind fella wears.
What fella?
The fella with the Cleveland Indians.
There's 9 players with the Cleveland Indians. Which fella are you talking about?
Oh, young man, when I say fella with the Cleveland Indians, I am only referring to one fella. The fella that pitches with the Cleveland Indians.
When you say the fella with the Cleveland Indians, you're only referring to one fella. The fella that pitches for the Cleveland Indians.
Yeah. As Orville said to Wilbur, you're right.
How do you like that? Now they're doing our routines in sporting goods stores.
Oh, forget about him, Custer. Hey, wait a minute. I've got an idea. Mrs. Wetwash's late husband used to be a big league ball player. Now, he was a home run king, in other words. Now, maybe she'll give you one of his bats for good luck. Let's go over to her house and ask her.
Oh, okay. I'll go right over now, huh? You're right, Abbott. As John Adams said to Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. How do you like that? I forgot what John Adams said to Henry Wadsworth Longfellow.
Well, good morning, Mrs. Wetwash.
Oh, hello, Mr. Abbott. Oh, my, you know you ought to muzzle that St. Bernard dog. Oh, pardon me, it's Costello. Tell me, Costello, how are things in Gawker, moron?
Mrs. Wetwash, I wish you hadn't said that. I was just telling Abbott, your face reminds me of a rose.
Oh, really? An American Beauty rose?
No, a rhinoceros.
Mrs. Wetwash, Costello's leaving for New York to join Joe DiMaggio's place. Take Joe's place. Isn't that wonderful? He's going to play with the Yanks.
Oh, I can't believe it.
Yes?
What do those big Yanks want with a little jerk like him?
Mrs. Wetwash, that was an insult. I'll have you know that beautiful women find me irresistible.
I don't find you irresistible.
And I don't find you beautiful.
Quiet, Costello. Ask her for those baseball bats her husband left her.
Okay. Mrs. Wetwash, I understand when your husband was alive, he had a lot of old bats.
That's a lie. He never went out with anybody but me.
No, Mrs. Wetwash. Costello means your husband's baseball bats. You see, he thought you might give him one of them.
Yes, that's right, Mrs. Wetwash. You see, I need a good bat.
Oh, you need a good bat. I'll be glad to help you out.
Can I have the bat right now?
Right now. Oh, the
my little head!
Presents lovely Marilyn Maxwell for Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of The Sea of Grass. For Camel fans everywhere, and in honor of New Orleans Jazz Week, Marilyn sings for the first time on the air the title song of the picture, New Orleans.
Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans and miss it each night and day? I know I'm not wrong, the feeling's getting stronger the longer I stay away. The moss-covered vines, the tall sugar pines, where mockingbirds used to sing. And I'd like to see the lazy Mississippi a-hurrying in. Magnolias in June, and soon I'm wishing that I were there. Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans when that's where you left your heart? And there's something more, I miss the one I care for more than I miss New Orleans. More than I miss New Orleans.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now back to Bud Abbott and Lou Costello.
Well, Costello, I'm going to New York with you. You know, Bucky Harris, the Yanks manager, gave me a job as coach for as long as you're on the team.
Look, Abbott,
If you're a coach, you must know all the players.
I certainly do.
Well, you know, I never met the guys, so you'll have to tell me their names, and then I'll know who's playing on the team.
Oh, I'll tell you their names, but you know, strange it may seem, they give these ball players nowadays very peculiar names.
You mean funny names?
Strange names, pet names, like Dizzy Dean and...
His brother Daffy?
Daffy Dean.
And their French cousin.
French?
Gouffet.
Gouffet Dean, oh, I see. Well, let's see, we have on the bags, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out.
I say, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
Are you the manager?
Yes.
You're going to be the coach, too?
Yes.
And you know the fellow's name?
Oh, I should.
Well, then who's on first?
Yes.
I mean, the fellow's name?
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first baseman.
Who?
The guy playing
who
first.
Who is on first?
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
That's it.
That's who?
Yes.
Look, you got a first baseman?
Certainly.
Who's playing first?
That's right.
When you pay off the first baseman every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it.
All I'm trying to find out is the fellow's name on first base.
Who?
The guy that gets the
That's
money.
That's it.
Who gets the money on
he
first
base? He does, every dollar. Sometimes his wife comes down and collects it.
Whose wife?
Yes. What's wrong with that?
Look, all I want to know is when you sign up the first baseman, how does he sign his name to the
who?
Contract? The guy.
Who?
How does he sign his
That's
name?
That's how he signs it.
Who?
Yes.
All I'm trying to find out is what's the guy's name on first base?
No, what is on second base?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
One base at a time.
Well, don't change the players.
I'm not changing nobody.
Take it easy, buddy.
I'm only asking you, who's the guy on first base?
That's right.
Okay.
All right.
I mean, what's the guy's name on first base?
No, what is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
Oh, he's on third. We're not talking about him. Now, let's go.
How did I get on third base?
Why, you mentioned his name.
If I mention a third baseman's name, who did I say is playing third?
No, who's playing first?
What's on first?
What's on second?
I don't know.
He's on third.
There I go, back on third again. Will you stay on third base
right.
And don't go off it?
All right, what do you want
to know? Now, who's playing third base?
Why do you insist on putting who on third base?
What am I putting on third?
Oh, what is on second?
You don't want who on second?
Who is on first?
I don't know. Third base! Field?
Sure.
The left fielder's name.
Why?
I just thought I'd ask.
Well, I just thought I'd tell you.
Now tell me who's playing left field.
Who is playing first?
I'm not. Stay out of the infield. I want to know what's the guy's name in left field.
No, what is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know. Third base. And the left fielder's name?
Why?
Because.
Oh, he's center field.
He is center field. Look, you got a pitcher on the team.
Sure.
The pitcher's name.
Tomorrow.
You don't want to tell me today?
I'm telling you,
then
man.
Go ahead.
Tomorrow.
What time?
What time what?
What time tomorrow you're going to tell me who's pitching?
Now listen, who is not pitching?
I'll break your arm, you say. Who's on first? I want to know what's the pitcher's name.
What's on second?
I don't know.
Third base.
Got a catcher?
Certainly.
The catcher's name.
Today.
Today. And tomorrow's pitcher.
Now you've got it.
All we got is a couple of days on the left hand. I'm a catcher, too.
So they tell
me. I get behind the plate, do some fancy catching. Tomorrow's pitching on my team, and a heavy hitter gets up.
Yes.
Now, the heavy hitter bunts the ball. When he bunts the ball, me being a good catcher, I want to throw the guy out of first base, so I pick up the ball and throw it to who?
Now, that's the first thing you've said right.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Well, that's all you have to do.
Is to throw the ball at first base.
Yes.
Now, who's got it?
Naturally.
Look, if I throw the ball at first base, somebody's got to get it. Now, who has it?
Naturally.
Who?
Naturally.
Naturally?
Naturally.
So I pick up the ball and I throw it to naturally.
No, you don't. You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's different.
That's what I said.
You're not saying that.
I throw the ball to naturally.
You throw it to who?
Naturally.
That's it.
That's what I said.
Listen, you ask me.
I throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
Now you ask me.
You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's
same
it.
As you.
Don't change him around.
Same as you.
Go ahead, now get it over.
I throw the ball to who? Whoever it is drops the ball and the guy runs a second.
Yes.
Who picks up the ball and throws it to what? One throws it to, I don't know. I don't know, throws it back to tomorrow. Triple play.
Yes.
Another guy gets up and it's a long fly ball to because. Why? I don't know. He's on third and I don't give a darn.
What?
I said I don't give a darn.
Oh, that's our shortstop.
I'm an idiot.
What is that, Lou, you've got in your hand there? Another telegram?
Hey, Abbott, look, I just got a telegram from Joe DiMaggio.
Well, go ahead and read it.
Okay. Dear Lou, just heard your show. I think you have the makings of the world's greatest natural ball player. You have spiked teeth, a club head, and you've been off your base for years.
Good night. Good night, folks.
Good night, everybody. And a special good night to Joe DiMaggio. Get well quick, Joe.
Listen to Abbott and Costello again next Thursday night when Costello is going to build himself a new prefabricated house.
You can imagine the trouble he'll get into. I don't know whether it'll be a one-story house or a two-story house, but anyway, that's another story. This is Michael Roy in Hollywood wishing you all a pleasant good night for Camel.
From April of 1947, there's the classic Who's On First routine, Bud Abbott and Lou Costello. In a moment, we'll enjoy Inter Sanctum Mysteries and Musical Score as Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Inter Sanctum Mysteries each week invited its listeners through the squeaking door to another night of horror. Lights Out veteran Raymond Edward Johnson provided the sibilant tones of Inter Sanctum's macabre host during the first four seasons. Paul McGrath later took over as Inter Sanctum's sinister host in May of 1945. Inter Sanctum Mysteries aired from January 1941 through October 1952 on radio and was created and produced by Hyman Brown. On today's program, Paul McGrath begins a long run as Inter Sanctum's sinister host, a role that he continued into television. The program is entitled Musical Score from May of 1945. A killer weaves a gruesome tale of music and murder on the high seas. It's Inter Sanctum Mysteries on Yesteryear.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends. This is your horror host at the squeaking door of the Inner Sanctum. Come in. Hang your hats on the torture rack over there and get cozy. Tonight, we've got cadenzas and cadavers, murders and melodies. Oh, that's all I can tell you now. No sense putting the cart before the hearse, is there? The title of our story is Musical Score. It's an original radio play by Christopher Mayo. And our star is Barry Kroger, who plays the role of Grasso. It's the story of a simple melody and of a killer who, as our story opens, is fighting desperately and alone against a raging storm off the coast of Maine. The lifeboat he is in is half foundered. The man's wild rowing does little good.
I'm a murderer! A murderer! I kill to be free, and I am free, free!
Or am I? Did I do it all for nothing? Peter Tull and his wife, they were the first to go, almost in the same spot. Tull, world-famous composer. Tull and that tune of his. He had all three of us on the life raft crazy with it. That maddening tune. I can still hear it humming. But the sea was calm that day. Dead calm.
15 days of calm. 15 days on a raft with a sick woman and three men. And that sun. Tull! Stop that blasted humming!
Sorry, Smythe. Marcia seems to like it. Part of a symphony I'm working on.
It does get on our nerves, Tull. How is your wife?
I don't know, Grasso. Poor Marcia.
Yes. Yes, I know.
I'm hungry. Smythe, how about some ration?
Ah, that fat belly of yours. I told you before, even off as chief mate, I run this life raft. We've got rations for one person for 2 days. Norman eats. We don't. Now forget it.
Well, we ought to be practical.
Smythe, what made the Santa Margarita go down so quickly?
I told you. Nothing but a stray mine. It was Argentine registry, coffee boat, a neutral. It's all it could have been. Oh, cut it out, will you, Tull? Or change the tune at least. I can't stand it.
Sorry.
We're done for.
Yeah, you may be a famous playwright, Grosso, but you don't know the sea. We're near the main fishing banks. We got a chance of beating the fisher we can hold out. Tull! Tull, will you stop that blasted tune?
Yes, for heaven's sake, Tull, quit it!
What a trio. A perfume manufacturer, a playwright, and a sailor. We all wanted food. We all wanted water. Sweet. An end of Tull's humming. Well, I wanted all that more than the others did. Without Marcia Tull, I could eat a little. Without Peter Tull's song, I could rest. The 17th night it was. The moon painted us all in silver and black. The others slept. Tull had his wife's head cradled in his lap. I crawled over to Tull.
How is she, Tull? You know, I think she's getting better. She smiled at me a minute ago. My singing helps.
Go on, Tull. Hum. Hum your song.
Hum, you fool, for the last time. Hum.
I cut off his infernal song, cut it off with my fingers, digging into the yielding flesh of his throat. He slumped over his wife's body. I closed my ears to her moans. I pushed them both into the dark water. I was a murderer.
All right. So Tull's gone. So's his wife. But they didn't fall off. One of the three of us murdered them. And it wasn't me.
I don't think you did, Smythe. I know I didn't.
You're voting 2-1 and electing me the murderer, huh?
Not necessarily, Grosso. It just looks a little like it.
How are you going to prove it? Who's going to believe you any more than they'd believe me? Even I was ready to murder for a crust of bread. For all I know, Smythe, you did it to sell even off some ration.
Well, we hang together or we hang separately, then.
Let's be practical about this, Smythe. None of us can afford to be mixed up in even the implication of murder. Suppose we have an agreement.
Huh?
Just in case we are picked up.
What kind of an agreement, Grusson?
Suppose we agree now and for all time that Tull and his wife simply died at sea and were buried at sea. On the 21st day, the rations were gone. And the song... We could all hear Tull humming it from the bottom of the sea. We watched each other like animals. On the 23rd day, a fishing boat picked us up, half dead, cooked alive. But we lived. I lived to fear and to kill again. Fear began with a little scene in the Portsmouth Hospital where we were being treated.
Well, you got your belly full of food even now?
Yes, yes. No more hunger pangs, Smythe. How about you, Grosso?
Pretty normal now, I guess.
Oh, by the way, a friend of mine, second mate on another ship, was in to see me yesterday.
Yes?
Yeah. They picked up a couple of survivors from the Santa Margarita before we were rescued. Not interested, eh? They were a man and his wife.
Well, don't be such a dramatic ass, Smythe. Was it...
No. Not poor Marcia and Peter Tull, but the friends of theirs, the Abraham Davises. You know them?
Davis? The symphony conductor?
Yeah, that's him. Wouldn't he like to know about the Tulls, huh?
You've got a flair for the dramatic, Smythe. Sometimes it's dangerous to be so talented. began to worry if both of them weren't ganging up on me. For days and weeks passed, and nothing happened. Only the Tull's melody was always with me, day and night. It kept ringing in my head, on and on and on. But at least I hadn't heard from the other two until one morning a letter came from Abraham Davis, the symphony conductor and dear friend of the Peter Tulls.
Dear sir, it has taken me this time to locate you three who were with my lamented friends, Peter and Marcia Tull, when they died at sea. I'm giving a reading from the score of Peter Tull's last symphony, my home prior to its first performance, and thought you might like to hear it.
Hear it? I didn't need a reading to hear it. But I'd have to be there. They would be. Maybe plotting to tell lies about me to Davis. Right then, I decided to kill them both. That way only lay freedom from anxiety. Murder would free me. Ivanov would be first. Yes. Fat, beady-eyed Ivanov. I studied their movements. Ivanov worked late at his office every Tuesday night. And on the second Tuesday of each month, the Halifax-bound cargo steamer San Luis left her New York dock. My plan was simple. It involved my waiting for Ivanov in his apartment house on the night of Tuesday, May 8th. My weapon would be simple, too. A common bread knife. Simple and so satisfying.
Good night, Mr. Ivanov. Thanks for the bottle of perfume. My girl's crazy about it.
No, it's yours. When you get married, I'll give you a quart of it.
Thanks.
I slid the knife from my sleeve and gripped the handle. Ivanov reached his door. His broad back was a leap away. I knew where to strike. You learn those tricks in my trade. An upward thrust just below the right shoulder blade.
You. It was you.
I watched him gasp out his last, feeling no remorse, no pity, just relief that I had nothing more to fear from Ivanov, at least. One more to kill, to be free. One more. I turned my back on the cooling mass at my feet and reached the street. I walked fast. I had only a little while to reach the docks and make my boat. Tull's melody kept beating its tireless notes against my brain.
Well, dear me and glory be. That's my idea of a real song plugger. Oh, speaking of music and murder, did you ever hear of the fiddler with a violent temper? He murdered his wife because she was always harping at him. Oh, yes, and because she had a cellist disposition, too.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Now let's go back to our murderer who's being haunted by a song. Remember what happened? A composer named Tull and his wife Marcia were thrown off a life raft and drowned by one of three other men on the raft. The killer has been telling us his story as he fights the sea in a lifeboat. You remember that he just murdered Ivanov and is now heading for a Halifax-bound cargo ship.
This is your flight crew, Mr. Grosser. Anything I can do for you?
No, thanks. Not just now. I'm going right to bed. When do we reach Halifax?
Tuesday morning, sir.
Yes.
Good night.
Thank you. Oh, wait. I'm afraid I'm rather a nervous traveler. Well, just between us, do we have competent officers aboard?
Your best, sir. Captain Jarms is tops.
Oh.
There's no better chief mate anywhere than Mr. Smythe, sir.
So he was there. I'd gone to a lot of trouble to get aboard that ship, and he was there. I kept out of his way entirely until last night. We were off the main shore. It was raining slightly. I slid the long, well-pointed bread knife into my sleeve and made my way toward the after deck. It lacked 3 minutes of 8 bells.
Skipper, I'm going after a smoke.
There he was, just where he had been every night, smoking, leaning against the rail near the small lifeboat. I could barely see him. It was so dark. But I stole toward him a foot at a time. Now I held my breath. I was so close. Slowly, I brought my arms straight to my side. Flexed my muscles, tensed for the thrust. I calculated the lunge. The cigarette told me where his mouth was. Then he turned his head a little, his cigarette flared and lit his face and his eyes were on me.
I thought you'd look me up if I came to the same spot each night. Turning out to be quite a killer, aren't you?
How did you guess me? Can you still hear me smile? Now, nobody knows what happened on the life raft. Nobody. I'm free.
Oh, you fool. You'll never be free. The song. The song will...
I dumped Smythe into one of the small boats and climbed in myself. I pushed out on the davits. And lowered the boat to within a couple of feet of the water, and then climbed down the supporting ropes to it. I cut the ropes, and the black hull of the ship slid past. We were alone, just Smythe and me, and Smythe was dead. So I threw him overboard, and I was alone and free. And tonight, I'm alone and free. Hear me, Tom! Hear me! No. No.
Am I going crazy? It can't be a lie. Not a lie. It is. Right, it's land. Rocks ahead. The surf breaking against them. We're coming close. Too close. I'm going to crash into them. The surf's picking up the boat and throwing me down the rocks. I'll be killed. No!
Wait, darling. I think I hear something outside.
What?
Stop a minute. I think I hear something.
You don't have to shout. What is it then?
Listen. Isn't that our door? Don't you hear pounding?
How could it be? This is a lighthouse. Who would come out to an island in this storm?
Just the same, I'm going to see.
All right, I'll go with you.
Ah!
Good heavens. What did he...
No. No. Not you. Stay away, Tom. Leave me alone. You're dead.
He's fainted, Marshal. Here, give me a hand. Put him in the living room bunk.
Peter?
Yes?
How did he know our name? What did he mean by what he said?
He's changed a lot. Since we saw him last. Since I saw him last. He was on the life raft with us.
The Santa Margarita?
Yes. I'd know him better than you would. You were ill. There's
name's Grasso. His was the last voice I heard before we fell overboard. Well, Mr. Grasso, you look a lot better this morning. How is your head?
It throbs. I can't move. What happened?
You were washed up against the rocks in a lifeboat. You must have hit your head and banged up your side.
You didn't drown.
Obviously. You didn't choke me thoroughly enough, Grasso. The water revived me. And I was clutching Marsha's dress.
Yes, but how did you...
Get here?
Yes.
Fishing boat. It was almost dawn when you tried to kill us. I managed to hold Marsha up for a little while. We were lucky.
What are you...
Here. Put your arm around my neck.
No.
I'll take you to the tower.
Where's your wife?
Marsha's gone to the mainland to get the doctor.
We're alone.
Yes. We're alone. Relax.
No. Let me go, Tull. I didn't mean to do it. I was crazy with hunger. And that tune of yours. You're all crazy, Tull. I'll pay you.
No,
I'll pay you.
It's too late, Grasso.
Anything.
Don't. Struggle. You could start the hemorrhage that way.
What are you going to do to me?
Why, nothing, of course.
Why?
Here we are.
You're not bringing me up here for the sun and the air, Tull. Why?
Very comfortable in this bed. Marsha liked it here. Wonderful view in every direction. These windows here pull to one side.
What?
Like this, see? Now, I'll leave you directly.
No, don't!
Don't what, Grasso?
Why? I don't know. But you're up to something.
Don't be silly. I'm just going to work on my music for a while. I'm having trouble with one part in it. It goes... Remember, Grasso?
That's it. I see it now. Why, you...
You'll be safe here. I have this barred metal door here to keep saboteurs out. If you want anything, just talk. Acoustics are wonderful down these stairs. You can hear everything.
Talk? No, my head. I'll do anything. Only don't...
Wait, Grasso. I heard about Ivanov's murder on the radio the other day.
All right. I did it. I tried to kill you and your wife. I killed Ivanov. I killed Smythe. Get the police, but don't play that song.
In the top drawer of the table next to the bed is a loaded revolver.
Stop, Tom! Stop!
My head, I...
Stop!
I can't go on.
The revolver. God. Yeah, it'll stop it. Now I'll never hear that song again. Never.
Play it! Play your melody, Tull! And the blaze is with you! I've got to tell you, Grasso. The gun is loaded with blanks.
There's still a way out. There's still a way out. All right, Tom, you win.
Hello? Hello, Marcia, darling. No, everything is fine now. Yes, yes, there is something you can do for me. Send Davis a wire, will you? Just say, plan fall production of symphony. Have just finished final score.
Say, how would some boogie-woogie sound to you right now, Sure, we got a moral for tonight's story. If you're thinking of marrying a musician, insist on a big house. Don't go in for this lighthouse-keeping stuff. Now it's time to close the squeaking door until next Tuesday, when Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup bring you Raymond Massey and another Inner Sanctum mystery story directed by Hyman Brown. So, until then, good night. Pleasant dreams.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From May of 1945, there's Musical Score and Inter Sanctum Mysteries. Well, with that, it's time to close, I'm afraid, our own squeaky door on this edition of Yesteryear. But that's okay. We'll make it a date to be back with you again next week at this very same time for more of the Golden Age of Radio, right here on Yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you, so-dio-vo-dio-do-dio-do.